Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Our first case for argument is Peters against West. Mr. McGrath.
May it please the court. Good morning, Your Honors. My name is William McGrath, and I'm representing the plaintiff, Vincent Peters, in this action. Mr. Peters is a writer and performer of rap music. He filed a copyright complaint against Mr. West, alleging that Mr. West had access to Mr. Peters' song entitled Stronger, and that Mr. West copied material of substance and value into his song, also entitled Stronger. The district court dismissed this on a 12B6 motion and entered judgment, and we asked this court to reverse. Importantly, Your Honors, for purposes of this motion, the defendants do not contest access. Mr. Peters alleges that he gave a copy of this song to Mr. John Monopoly, who was a longtime friend and manager of Mr. West, and that just 6 months, 7 months later, Mr. West's song with the infringing material was released. So the question before the court, Your Honor, is whether Mr. Peters has plausibly alleged two things: that the lyrics that were copied are original, and secondly, whether there is substantial similarity, whether material of substance and value has been copied.
So why was the district court not correct to look at the parts of these two competing songs and see if there was originality? That which doesn't kill me makes me stronger, Kate Moss. It's hard for me to imagine how you would go about it without at least starting there.
Your Honor, it had the right to look at the material. One of the problems is that it went beyond. The district court went into factual inquiries.
She looks at the phrase that you think was copied, which is the one I just said, a reference from Nietzsche. You can't, I assume, be taking the position that every phrase, if it appears in two different songs, is automatically copyright infringement.
No, Your Honor. The problem here was that the court, disregarded the principle of the combination of the elements, which is well established here in the Seventh Circuit.
I don't know why that helps you, actually, because if you look at the full lyrics of both pieces, they're really quite different.
We're focusing, Your Honor, on the lyrics contained in the hook, the most important part of the case.
I understand you're looking at the hook, but even so, we have at the end of the Appellee's appendix the two different things. There's a line, but the context is different. The message seems to be different. It's like if you put motherhood and apple pie in the first song and you put it in the second song, but you're making completely different points out of the phrase. I don't see why it helps you to look at the hook as a whole.
When you look at the hook as a whole, and we don't need to look at the entire song, all the different verses. What we're focusing on is the hook and the several elements within the hook that are similar. The quote from Nietzsche, the triple rhyme, the use of the word wronger, which is an incorrect grammatical. And then just outside of the hook, this unusual reference to Kate Moss, a British model. Highly unusual in this context.
But that's buried way in the middle of the songs.
It's immediately following the second repetition of the refrain. But So we're looking at the combination of all these things in that four-line hook, together with the copying of the title, together with the allusion to Kate Moss, the triple rhyme of wronger, stronger, longer. These are all original elements when you combine them into a single refrain, which is the most...
I'm going to stick with Kate Moss being in completely different parts of the song. In the Kanye song, it's the way they've got it set out anyway. It's the fourth line of the first verse, and it's the third line of the second verse in his. I just don't see where that gets you anywhere.
Your Honor, it's evidence of copying. As it was alleged, this is a highly incongruous reference in a rap song. So it seems, together with all the other instances we're referring to, it seems highly unusual or not coincidental for someone who had access to the song for that to appear there. The real problem with the way the district court approached this was she engaged in this dissection analysis. Rather than looking at the refrain as a whole, the court kind of picked it apart into fragmented pieces and said, well, this word isn't original, or this phrase isn't original. But in doing that, I think she ignored the refrain as a whole as being an original part. And the refrain itself, just copying a refrain, Your Honor, we would say can constitute substantial similarity. It's a very important part of the song. It's repeated over and over six times in the plaintiff's song. Part of substantial similarity is to look at the significance of it.
So are you arguing that the phrase, which is put a little bit differently, but anyway, what don't kill me, make me stronger, is itself copyrighted?
No, Your Honor. We're saying in combination.
So when you copy something that isn't copyrighted, does that create a violation?
No. No,
okay.
not in and of itself.
So you could have had, you know, man is born free, but everywhere he is in chains in both pieces. And since that's not, as far as I know, under copyright at the moment, since Rousseau lived a really long time ago, you could copy that.
If that's all that is copied, if all they had copied here was a quote from Nietzsche, we wouldn't be here.
Counsel, the problem is that the things you think were copied are themselves not expressions. I mean, copyright covers the expression rather than the idea, so you can't get a copyright in the word wronger or the title stronger or a reference to Kate Moss. Now, how does one get a copyright in a bunch of things, none of which is itself an expression? I can sort of say if this song, I could understand a proposition, if the song were an arrangement of 15 famous proverbs in a particular order, that the expression would be the order in which the proverbs went. I mean, that's similar to the proposition that you can get a copyright in a map, even though you can't get a copyright in the way the streets are on the streets. But this doesn't look like an arrangement of things otherwise in the public domain. The contention seems to be that just using anywhere four things that were not expressions is a copyright problem, and that's what greatly puzzles me.
Your Honor, I would say when they're brought together into a single refrain, that becomes expression.
They are put together in a single refrain. As Judge Wood said, the reference to Kate Moss is not part of the hook. It's just there. The title is not part of the hook, right? It doesn't look like my example of 15 proverbs in a particular arrangement. It doesn't look like a map. It's not a situation where the arrangement is the expression. It looks like you're arguing that if you use any four things that have appeared in somebody else's song, even if the arrangement is totally different, there's a copyright problem.
Your Honor, I think we need to keep in mind the Feist case and the standard of originality. It's a very, very low standard, no matter how simple, crude, humble, or obvious, so long as there's...
The question in Feist was whether something was within the scope of a copyright clause of the Constitution. That's not our problem here.
The court does talk at great length, though, about the concept of originality and how low the threshold is. It doesn't need to be an elaborate work. You can bring some pieces of creativity together, and that suffices. I think another problem with the court's originality analysis is that it was looking, it was making factual findings. It finds several elements of the hook and the reference to Kate Moss to just be common. But that's a factual question. You know, whether something is common, how common is it, to whom is it common? They've shown that 11 titles use the phrase, what don't kill you. We say, well, that's out of the database they looked at was 6.5 million songs. That's not exactly common.
But that includes, Rachmaninoff. I mean, I'm not too persuaded by that. Is Mr. Peters... suing everybody else who uses this phrase? Isn't there like a new Kelly Clarkson song that also
no,
does?
I don't know what new songs there might be, but it's not just the phrase, Your Honor. The quote.
But you're not making a claim that there's anything similar about the music or about the beat or about the rhythm or about some of the things that exist in these earlier cases.
Not the music per se, but the sound. And the way the lyrics sound and look, and that's what we're looking at. The rhyme scheme, the triple rhyme scheme, the court found that to be common, and yet the plaintiff shown three instances where that same rhyme scheme appears, two of which were subsequent to Mr. West's song coming out. So what I think this shows is these are factual findings that I think it was not proper on a motion to dismiss. Your Honor, I see my white light is on, and I'll, unless there are some more questions, I'll save my time for rebuttal.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, my name is Eileen Farkas from Prior Cashman for the defendants' appellees. As Your Honors have pointed out, this claim is about lyrics or words. They just so happen to be in two songs. But unlike a lot of most of the music cases that are usually before this court and other courts, most of those cases deal with music in addition to lyrics. Here we're really just talking about words that happen to be in a song. And here we're talking about four or five words and phrases that are allegedly similar between the two songs at issue.
Let me focus for a second on Wronger. Surely there are some words that are odd enough or particular enough that you would immediately think that there was copying. So for some reason, what has just popped into my head is supercalifragilisticexpialidocious. And if that were copied in another song, you would, even though it's only one word, you would say there'd been copying, wouldn't you?
Assuming that the plaintiff was the copyright owner and it wasn't in public domain, we might have a problem here. But I don't think that Wronger rises to that level, particularly given the derivation of Wronger, that it derives from the use of the Nietzsche quote, which is in the public domain, that the quote ends in the word stronger, that the English language is limited in terms of what rhymes with stronger, or, you know, if you can't find enough words as seems neither individual was able to do to rhyme with stronger. You get to strong. There's only so many words that rhyme with strong, and that shows why it's actually been used before in at least one or two other songs that we found. So if you're going to have a rhyme scheme, which in and of itself is not protectable, and the words rhyme with strong, I don't think it's particularly surprising that you're going to end up with longer and even wronger. And even if this court could find that the use of the word wronger is somewhat different or unique, for lack of a better word, you know, it's well settled that single words are not copyrightable. So here, I don't see how the use of one word, even if it was found to be somewhat unique, would make the two songs at issue substantially similar. So getting back to what I was saying, the plaintiff concedes that with the exception of the Kate Moss reference, which, as Your Honor pointed out, is buried in two different places in two different verses of the song, and is not protectable, certainly not by the plaintiff or even Ms. Moss herself, that the remaining three or four alleged similarities all derive from the century-old maxim that obviously was written by someone else. And even the expressions of the maxim are different in each song. So he is left with the argument that the combination of these alleged similarities is original enough to rise to the level of protectable expression.
Yeah, and, I mean, as I understand his argument, it's the combination of the use of the Nietzsche phrase, the rhyming scheme, plus the incorporation of one particular allusion to, if you will, female beauty, Kate Moss, that makes it copying.
Right, and to that, the district court properly held that in order for a combination of non-protectable elements to rise to the level of protectable expression, they have to be numerous enough, and the selection and arrangement has to be original enough that the combination itself is protectable. And the district court properly found that here it simply doesn't rise to that level, that if the scant amount of alleged similarities at issue here, particularly given the fact that almost all of them, with the exception of the Kate Moss reference, derive from the Nietzsche quote, that you're going to be creating a dangerously low threshold to give the plaintiff a monopoly over that small amount of material. And the cases that the plaintiff relied upon are all entirely distinguishable from this case. In the three cases that he relies upon, they all dealt with cases where the defendants conceded that they not only had access to the plaintiff's work, but that they copied plaintiff's work, and the similarities that were at issue were vastly greater than what we have here. I mean, they essentially copied the plaintiff's entire work, and that's just not what we have here. Here, as Your Honor pointed out, you know, the lyrics that are attached to as an appendix, the vast majority of them are not even alleged to be similar. And the hooks or the chorus of the song, I believe it's 9 out of 51 words in our chorus are alleged to be similar to theirs, and they're not even in the same place and in the same order.
Can you think of other cases where different people have incorporated sayings or proverbs or maxims or commonly used phrases in different ways?
And found not to be protectable?
Well, either yes, protectable or not protectable.
Well, the Acuff-Rose case that we cited in our brief is a very good example of that, where a publicly available maxim was used, and the court found that you can't claim protection of that, even though the plaintiff in that case claimed that he created it, that he didn't even know about the maxim, which is not what we have here. And there the court found that it enjoyed a robust, I think it was a robust experience in the public domain before the plaintiff ever created it. And, in fact, the district court here cited that quote in that case for that proposition.
You've got to stand for something or you'll fall for anything.
That was it. I was going to give it a try, but I thought I'd butcher it. So what we have here is a situation where, you know, the plaintiff is claiming that the district court erred in determining the issue of substantial similarity on a motion to dismiss. And as we cited in our brief and as we did below, there is ample authority for courts deciding the issue of substantial similarity on a motion to dismiss, particularly where the court can have the works before them, can conduct a side-by-side analysis, and determine that no reasonable juror would find the work substantially similar. And that's particularly appropriate where the alleged similarities consist of nothing more than unprotectable elements. And there is authority from the district court here. There is the Second Circuit recently in 2010 went through a considerable discussion about the appropriateness to decide this issue on a motion to dismiss. The Ninth Circuit, the Eighth Circuit, the Fifth Circuit, the Tenth Circuit, there's ample authority which is cited in our brief. In terms of the plaintiff's contention that the district court engaged in improper fact-finding in terms of determining how common the elements are, you know, that's really a red herring. The district court found that the elements were not protectable. How common they are is almost besides the point. They found that the quote was not original to plaintiff. He could not claim protection in those phrases. He could not claim protection in a rhyme scheme. That is an idea. It's a concept. It's not, and both parties expressed that idea differently. The court found that titles are not copyrightable and that the plaintiff cannot claim copyright protection in someone else's name. And so the issue of fact-finding is not really what happened here. The court, as it is empowered to do, found that the alleged similarities were not protectable. Amending the complaint, allowing discovery, is not going to change the lyrics here. The lyrics are what they are. The alleged similarities are what they are. And no amount of fact-finding, and certainly not expert discovery, is going to change what words are issued here, what words are at issue here. And the last portion of the district court's analysis was once the unprotectable elements are filtered out of the equation, you look at the total concept and feel of the songs. And the court, again, engaged in a side-by-side comparison of the lyrics and found that once these elements are removed, there are no similarities between the lyrics. And I would even say
it's
that...
It's an interesting approach. Once you remove all the similarities, you find that there are no similarities in the lyrics.
The unprotectable similarities. I mean, obviously, if some of them were protectable, they would be included. Although I would say that even if the alleged similarities were included in the analysis, it wouldn't change the result. The total concept and feel of the two songs that are at issue are completely different. The court can hear the songs for itself. It's in the record.
Court has. So.
Okay.
Some members of the court have.
I hope you enjoyed at least one of them. The music is, they're completely different songs. The music is different. The tempo is different. The lyrics are, with the exception of the few unprotectable elements, completely different, and even those are expressed differently. And the district court was entirely correct in finding that no reasonable juror would listen to this, the two songs, and find that the defendant appropriated.
I listened to them. I thought no reasonable person could listen to them for any good length.
I guess you can set new law on that one.
Just showing my age.
It's not necessarily age.
So your response is de gustibus non disputandum. You can't make disputes about taste.
So whether you like it or not, the district court was whether you like the music or not, I should say, the district court was entirely within its power and correctly found that the two songs at issue were not substantially similar. And unless Your Honors have any questions... Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Anything further, Mr. McGrath?
Just a few things to point out. The Acuff-Rose case about the saying. That was the only thing copied in that case, one expression, and that's why that was found not protectable. The court found these elements not protectable because they were common. So there was fact-finding going on here. It's not just they weren't just not protectable. It's they were not protectable because they were common. I think a dangerous thing that the district court is doing here is limiting this combination of elements doctrine. She said it's only applicable where there's near identity. And counsel referred to the similarities in those other cases. But that's not what Feist talks about. That's not what this court's decision, say, in Schrock talks about, or the Bucklew case or the Rulo case. Those don't limit this combination of elements doctrine to cases of near identity. So I see my time is up. Oh, no, it's not up, but that's right. That's I appreciate Your Honor's attention. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. The case is taken under advisement.